Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Coffee Talk. If you've just joined, Coffee Talks are the short in-between episodes where we read your user-submitted stories, hang out with friends, talk about witchy pop culture, or chat with you about what is going on in our personal practices. If you want to be featured on Coffee Talk, you can shoot us an email at submissions@coffeeandcauldrons.com, or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 351-207-0799, or you can go to our website, coffeeandcauldrons.com, to enter a submission. You can send us your tips, your ghost stories, or any kind of funny story that you think the community would love to hear, but be sure to let us know if we can use your name or if you would prefer to be anonymous. Social media is also a very, very good way to get your credit. That being said, this week, Maria is still sick. She's in the trenches. Let's all send our thoughts and prayers to her. But I am joined today with a guest. Becky, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Becky Ann Galentine, or My Bloody Galentine on social media.
Hello. If you guys are not familiar with Becky's work, she does a lot of really cool historical ghost stuff. It's very fun. I like it. You also just had a documentary come out, right?
I did. It was filmed over a year ago, but it finally crawled to the finish line. It was an investigation at a haunted hotel with the world's largest, Guinness World's largest Ouija board on top. Not the world's largest anymore. We've got a competitor, so.
Sheesh. I did not know that. That's crazy.
There was a war between the two largest Ouija boards, and there was drama. It was in the news. It was like the tabloids, and I don't know why it didn't get noticed more, but basically this guy puts the largest...
Nobody but people like us care about Ouija boards.
Well, I think some people don't even want to look at it, but it's actually hilarious. They put the largest one on the roof, and then... You know, Rick or Mortis, Shrek, he has like an Addams family. That's what they're known for. And he also makes custom Ouija boards. And he's like, but I'm going to do it in Salem. So he makes a larger Ouija board. And then they're like, this is the largest one, but you have to contact Guinness to get them to come back over here to verify that it's the largest. Because it had advertising on the outside, it was technically not the largest. So the hotel still holds in Windsor, Pennsylvania, the record. So Blair, being fun, was like, hey, let's duel. Like, bring your Ouija board to me. And they're like, no. But that was the beef.
I saw a video the other day of somebody, like, in their house, they had... I don't know, spacers for the door or something of one of their rooms, and the spacers were made of cut up Ouija boards, and they were like, I don't even want to touch it. And I was like, oh my God, it's not that serious.
Relax. No, that's the worst one. I had someone make like 10 videos about how, and they were out of breath, so it makes it even funnier. They're like, there's a creator, My Bloody Guillotine, they said. And they were like, this is when I first started. And I was traumatized because I'd never had hate before. And they're like, she says she doesn't care if you use a Ouija board. Sorry, I'm losing my voice. And the video I put up said, here's some tips of people that are generally accepted for using a Ouija board. Use them or don't. I don't care. That's what I said. And they were like, she's going to get kids
shaking,
possessed.
Throwing up, crying.
Yes. And everyone was like, I agree with you. She shouldn't be telling kids to use Ouija boards. And now here I am. I had to fight through that. But
Here's the thing. Here's the thing. And I've talked about this a few times on here. I'm a big believer in Ouija boards. I love them. But at the end of the day, the traditional Ouija board that we know and love is a Hasbro toy. It's a Hasbro toy targeted and marketed to children. It's not that serious. Relax. I do think that they are very valid tools that can absolutely be used with intention, ritual. Like, there are so many steps that you need to do before utilizing a Ouija board. Like, people need to stop watching horror films. Like, yeah, if they're going to be that true about it.
It was a dating game. It was a dating game, and you could walk down to the penny store, the five and dime, and they have them in the window at a novelty store, and they're on display, and you could pick different sizes, and nobody cared that. And then it was sold to Hasbro. Again, the company that makes My Little Pony. So literally, you have Rainbow Dash and Firefly and all the ponies, and then you have these. And I always have loved and appreciated that, you know, juxtaposition. And it's like, how can you say that this is like so serious? Like you said, it's not that serious. It's,
I mean, like, I do think it can absolutely be used seriously, but at the end of the day, there's nothing innately magical about a piece of cardboard and a plastic planchette. There just isn't. And like, yes, they can be used magically. Yes, there's all this nuance that comes with it. But in and of itself, it is a piece of fucking cardboard.
Yep. Yep. And people will say, when they see my house, I was fine until I saw those. I said, fine until Jesus I saw the Ouija boards. Not the talking boards, the Ouija boards.
I can accept children's coffins, but I draw the line at boards.
Yeah, it's very serious for people, and that's fine. And I always tell people, I'm not pushing you to accept it. It's okay.
Yeah.
I said it's no different than any other tool, but people are fine with a pendulum, because what I've heard from a lot of people in like our community specifically, or like the paranormal community, they'll say, oh, well, it's different because you actually put your hand on it. And it's like, well, you hold a pendulum with your hand, you hold a spirit box. What's the difference? Like, oh, it's the connection, it flows through you. Come on.
There's just, it's one of those things that I definitely think that these tools are like so valid and so good, but I also think that people put way too much faith in mass produced things. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, it's like when I first started creating 1 million years ago, I shudder to think, but there was a girl who had messaged me, and this is like, I had like at the time less than 5,000 followers. Like I was new. And she messaged me and told me that her tarot deck was evil and possessed, and that she was like finding God now or something to that effect. And so she coated her entire tarot deck in baking soda, then covered it in tin foil, so that way the demons would stay inside the tarot deck. And I was like, why didn't you just throw it out? You're still ultimately keeping it in your house. Yeah. Why didn't you just throw it away?
I don't know. That's beyond me. And it goes back to who they're getting advice from, I think, too. Like someone put that idea there. You know, I had someone send me a deck that they said bit them. She found them secondhand. And it was one you could get on Amazon. She said, this deck bit me. And I was like, I believe you. But
yeah,
you
know. But I would like to know what that looks like.
Well, I think maybe like when she went to like touch she felt a sensation, and maybe
that makes sense. Yeah, all right.
What I thought from
obviously my brain is like so literal sometimes that I'm thinking of it like.
Yeah, chomping. Like, you know, like, Halloween Town, the biting back like that.
But like, I definitely get what you mean. Like a spiritual bite, if you will.
Just like a ghostly bite. Yeah. So I think what happened is someone, maybe if it's so theoretically, I'm going with what she said was true. I believe that maybe someone bought the deck solely to get answers about like a romantic situation they were really frustrated about. And then they were like, this didn't work. I didn't get the results I wanted, threw it out. I think there are decks
that for hold that
kind of energy.
Oh, 1,000%. Like, I mean, I read tarot as my day job, right? And my day job has so many toxic human beings that come to me that I use one specific deck for that, and I burn it annually and I get a new one because it's just too much. There's too much negative energy that like kind of gets held into that I could totally see how that would correlate.
Yeah.
I also think that donating a tarot deck to a thrift store is wild.
I find it all the time.
I'm in like a Bible Belt area, so I do not. But
I found like a 1970s one. This was so cute. It was the Rider-Waite, but it was definitely like an old, like a original person who was reading donated. Yeah. And I don't know how it got there, but inside there were Mardi Gras coins. And I was like, oh, this has so much of like someone's story. And I would never use that, but I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, to keep it forever. Mm-hmm. I'm like, So I don't share this online. Becky and I were talking about this before we started to record, but Becky and I both collect antiques. I call them my haunted treasure trove, or my cursed artifacts. my husband really hates them. We've talked about them that a bunch on the podcast, that my husband hates my cursed items that I bring home. But I do that too. I will buy something because I feel like it tells a story, not because I actually want to use it. And mm-hmm. I want to protect that story.
Exactly.
Do you know what I mean?
Well, because another person would say, oh, $3 for a vintage tarot deck. I'm going to go to eBay and flip it. And that's yeah. now the story. And for me, it's like, this was someone's and it meant a lot to them. And somewhere along the line, someone didn't see how much it meant to them because they were used yeah. and, you know, well-loved. So unless they were like a nasty, terrible person and I'm like, ah.
Well, but sure, I think but we have to like make the assumptions here yeah. that like they weren't. I don't know. I like to.
But I feel like faith. You would pick up on it. You know what I mean? There have been times where I'm like, ooh, I don't really want that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like, so I collect Cupie dolls. It's a thing.
Yeah.
if it is a Cupie related and I see it in a thrift store, I'm going to purchase it. That's just much to my husband's dismay. And I have this like 4 foot tall Cupie that I got that's like got posable limbs and it's got like the classic side eye Cupie face and I love it, but my husband is convinced that it's cursed by the devil himself. I used to keep it next to our television, like in our bedroom. So at nighttime it would be like you'd have like the TV right here and the Cupie would just be like and he was like, that thing is going to eat us in our sleep.
you better never meet my mother because she's a Cupie gal. Like, yeah, through and through. Wait, my mom loved Cupie so much that she wrote a little note, like a little letter to one of the Doll Reader magazines. It's called Doll Reader, and it's a famous doll magazine. And she was like, I grew up with Rose O'Neill, and it got published. And she's like, I published as a doll collector. This is in the 90s, but that was like
a pivotal moment
in my household. So I support the Cupies and I they're normalized for me, but I also understand having friends come over, they're like, it's the side eye,
but the side eye is so good and like
it's too emotive for people.
They are projecting some evilness. I think that a lot of people are really afraid of dolls post Chucky.
Yeah,
that the Cupie like really sets you up to like no. to be afraid of the doll.
Well, and I think it's kind of uncanny valley because it's not quite a baby. Like it's kind of like a little almost fairy Cupid, yeah. maybe. Like I'm not sure what they're supposed to be, but the original ones had wings and yeah. And they have like the little like mohawk for people who aren't familiar. But it's like
so cute.
You're kind of a baby, but you're not exactly a baby, so I think that too
it's
about like, them.
It's baby adjacent. I think they're so good. I love them so much. Are you familiar with Sunny Angel?
Mm-mm.
It's like a Japanese blind box creator, and they do Cupie dolls essentially, but they wear these little hats. And I have so many of those, and my husband just gets so upset every time I buy them. He's like, why do you need to bring these demented babies into our house? He doesn't have a problem with, like, my actual dead things. That doesn't bother him at all. The Cupie dolls, he's like, that's a step too far.
I draw the line at adorable.
I draw the line at adorable babies. Oh my goodness. What is, out of like recent thrifts, like your favorite thing that you've recently gotten?
You know, thrifting has not been that good to me lately. So really? I'm trying to think. Yeah, you know, down here, people are very into antiques and they're very well informed. So a lot of the things I'm finding are antique stores or marketplace. But I'm thinking like specifically Goodwill. And I found some crazy things at Goodwill. Like, pretty wild things over the year. One time I found an antique gynecological chair at Goodwill. I'm like, who donated this and for why?
I have questions. First of all, when you had an antique gynecological chair, why was your first thought Goodwill?
Yeah, Goodwill could use this, you know?
You know who could use this? It's the people who can't afford very much.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Honestly, I haven't bought anything from Goodwill in years. They've changed. I mean, not even just Goodwill. Thrift stores. They put their witchy little books that I like to buy. Now they're $10 and everything's in a case and you can't buy old camera stuff. And it's
thanks, Mercari resellers. You've ruined our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I always talk about 5 years ago, I was thrifting and I found like the holy grail of vintage swimsuits, and it's called the scandal suit. So in the 60s, we weren't quite bikini yet, but there was a bikini-esque suit that had a top and a bottom, but it was connected by fishnet in the middle. And they released it in leopard print and black. And I found one, and it was in the lingerie section. And that's, I was like, so I found a scandal suit. Doesn't happen anymore. They have vintage racks at the Goodwill now.
For me personally, like clothing wise, do you guys have Buffalo exchanges out there?
There's actually one like right up the road. Okay,
when I was like 20 years old, I'm from San Francisco, and there's a Buffalo Exchange on Haight Street in San Francisco, if you're familiar with Haight and Ashbury. And it was huge, and you could get really good stuff in there just by like the nature of its location. There was always like really good finds at that Buffalo Exchange. And I will never forget the traumatic experience that baby Robin had. Okay, I was just this little thing. I was like, I'm going to go to Buffalo Exchange and I'm going to sell my used things. And then I'm going to turn around and buy some more stuff from there. And the girl at Buffalo Exchange handled each one of my garments like I was the grossest peasant that ever lived. And she was just like, I don't think we could sell any of this if you forced us to. And I was just like, all right, I'm so sorry for wasting your time. Goodbye.
That was out of pocket. She didn't have to do you like that. She could have said, I'm sorry, we're at capacity. We don't need this. Or like anything. Yeah,
but that Buffalo Exchange was like filled with the meanest mean girls that ever did mean on purpose.
Yeah. Yeah. I think everyone has had that experience where they're like, you know, I walked in one time and I know it was right before a dancing concert. And I was like, I want some extra money for the show. So I walked in with a dead stock butterfly sequin top before they started reproducing them. And it had the original tag. And I had found it thrifting. I was like, what will they give me? And they're like, we can give you $7 for this.
Oh, suck me. Offensive.
Yeah. But they've fallen off. People don't really hit the Buffalo Exchange like they used to.
Oh my God. Well, I mean, also I'm like a million years old. So at 20, that was 15 years ago. Don't tell anyone. And I remember like being so jazzed about it. I was like, here I go into Buffalo Exchange. I'm going to be so rich. I was not. She did not buy one garment, not one thing of mine.
Yep, and you come in with your clothes neat, and they like throw it in a big pile. Oh, they're like, and they're like, we can't fit this back in the bag that you had it neatly folded in here.
Yeah, and what was even worse? So like at the time, I was going through, we're gonna call it, some body issues. Okay, for the trigger warning, and she literally like picked up my clothes. And she goes, we don't sell this size here. Like implying it was too big. And I was like, what if this is my last straw?
Wow.
I was like, what if this was my last straw?
You better take these clothes and donate them to the animal shelter, because that's the only place that they can.
Literally, so there was a Goodwill across the street. It was like one block and across the street. And she goes, there's a Goodwill down the street that's probably better suited for there. I was like, I will throw myself into the ocean and not return. Thank you so much.
I'm shocked. I hope you cross paths with her someday and can just laser beam eye her. That's all you need to do.
I don't even remember what she looks like, but I just remember the interaction. Do you know what I mean?
It was a blur. It was so traumatic that it's like, I don't want to remember this.
I blacked out. I don't remember anything anymore. I was just like, I have to go home and reevaluate my entire life. It's like, Brandy Melville, do you remember Randy Melville?
No, I know there's like a documentary coming out. I don't know anything about that. There is a documentary
coming out. But it was like a huge thing when I was in my early 20s. It's like kind of like an Aeropostale, except for everything in the store was one size. Mm. Everything was called one size fits most, which was not accurate. One size fits most if the most is an extra small. And they have a documentary that's out. We just started watching it, but it's more about the fast fashion industry. I was expecting it to be about the fact that everything was one size fit most. Mm. And that store was also like that. You would go in there and they'd be like, I don't think we're gonna have anything that will fit you. And you'd be like, I will cry after this interaction for the next 3 days. Thank you so much.
We really had to suffer growing up in that generation. You know, all of your friends in school are wearing Hollister and they only make like the large is like a small. Like I could not fit into a large at Hollister today. And I think that like the sizeism and the fact that the owners of these companies came out and they said this, they're like, yeah, you know, we don't want
fat people wearing our clothes. They've outright said it. It's crazy.
Yeah. And we had to live through that. And we had to live through,
it was like Abercrombie had the 000 size for a while. Mm-hmm. Who was that for?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was just, double zero. They couldn't make it like starting at small. They're like, we need to make this smaller than the zero.
We need you to know that there's even a smaller size than the small and you're too big for it.
And it's fine. You know, now I see things are changing for kids that are growing up, but nobody talks about the trauma that we had to experience when we're watching these people get called plus size and they were our size, and that's it's
they
like
oh, they put on size.
they put on weight, and it's like plastered everywhere. And you know, I try not to even when I'm on my platform talk about, you know, body image at all, because I know what that is. And I have companies with like weight loss teas and things. I'm like, I would never do that to anyone. This is supposed to be like a safe space. Yeah,
I got sent a request to partner with a company who they wanted me to do a fitness thing. Like it was like a bike or a treadmill, something like that. And the like tagline that they started with was, because I was like a week postpartum from having my second child. The tagline they started with was, bounce your body back with us. And I'm just like, yuck.
Yeah.
Yucky. Don't ever message me that ever at all.
No. And like, I don't think it'll ever be a perfect world, but I think that
definitely not.
We need to send some extra love to people in our age group that had to live through that and have to live through.
I mean, I obviously don't know what like Gen Z is going through, because I'm sure that they've got some stuff too.
But it's a little different. You know, there is discussion.
But I wonder what it's like. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'll never know what it's like to see someone on TikTok that's like extremely, you know, in one direction of a body image and see that go viral for their body type and say, totally. Oh, because I do see the comments that are like, oh, this is what I wish I was. So you have this rapid exposure, you know, and like I said, things are changing as far as like brands trying to bring in representation, because we didn't have that. We didn't have mannequins that weren't, you know,
rail thin.
Yeah, that they were
one body type, and they were,
they had to have the hip bone showing. I remember that being like a thing, and like being on Zanga and being 13 years old on Zanga, and it would be like, God, hip bones and collarbones are so, and it's like, oh,
live journal for me. I wasn't a Zanga girl, I was live journal.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But same difference. It's just you were like definitely not as cool as me, which is so sad for you, and that's okay. You're allowed to not be as cool as I was.
I think, you know, yeah, there were like two people in live journal, and then Zanga was like the direction I went, and it was like because of those little graphics that we could put with like the emo lyrics on them.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, but then I got it banned from school. I stay getting stuff banned from the school on the internet.
I got Gaia Online banned from school. So not to brag, but I was very fucking cool when I was in high school. And I did get Gaia Online banned. It was put on the little, do you remember like and I'm sure they still have something like this, but there was like the school protected thing, and it'd be like a dog that was like, you're not allowed to. Gaia Online was one of those things, because I would go into the library at lunchtime and I would get my gold coins. Because I was very popular, actually, and people really liked me and thought I was so neat that I had to hide in the library because there were just too many fans.
It's crazy too, like the disappointment when you go on and you use the school computer for whatever you shouldn't be, and then you type in your website, and then it's like, no, not anymore. But
we've taken that away from you. Yes, you've used the school library for the last 2 years for this, but we have caught on to you. And the answer is no.
And how did the weirdo down in the computer lab figure it out? And it's like, I wonder what his thoughts were. Like, do they process, or is it like kind of like a medical professional where it's like, I only see this from the capacity of my job? Or is he like, what are they into? Like, how did they find
this? What is this about?
How invested?
Like, computer lab guy was like an 80-year-old woman. So not a guy at all. She was a woman who volunteered for the computer lab. So she wasn't even an employee. And I think that she just hated me and was like, I'm going to get her. Which, to be fair, I was very annoying in high school. Not that I'm like not annoying now, but I was like really annoying in high school. So that was valid on her part. You know what? I see you, queen.
No. Mine was a man. His name was Tim, and he had Xena Warrior Princess in a cardboard cutout in his house, like peering out the window. So he should have seen me and recognized that I needed the internet to survive that small town school. He should have known. But instead, he was like, no, we're going to take away your computer.
Not for you. Not for you, but ma'am.
The Xena. I can enjoy my Xena and everyone in the community.
But I was allowed LiveJournal. They never took LiveJournal away from me.
Lucky.
So he probably read my journal entries and was like, this girl needs an outlet. She is not doing well. She is engaging with the werewolf transformation LiveJournal witchcraft spells. She needs all the help she can get. I'm not taking this from her.
I like to think that she read that. I like to think that she got into your journal and was like, what if she's invested? What if you had this compelling story going on and she's like,
I did not. So I have since forgotten my password for my old live journal and it is private. But my friend, Trisha, shout out, was able to get into hers and she like gave me the password at the time so that way I could get in there and read mine. And it was... It was not only not compelling, but there was like, someone needed to help me. And I don't even like help, like mental help. I mean, like, your girl could not spell. It was like, I was a George Bush child left behind. It was embarrassing. It was sad. I spelled the words wrong. Like, I still typo now, but there are typos on my phone, right? Because like, you get your little thumbs out and it does things, but it was like straight up like did not know the difference between like two and two. Like, it was like, you are a senior in high school, Robin, are you good? I guess college freaked me out.
I had a Zanga romance. I shouldn't say this publicly because it was like a scandal. Like, they had a girlfriend, but like, and they're married now to that girlfriend, but he No, but we were meant to be together. And so
obviously
he kept his, I deleted mine because I wanted the pain to go away of not ending up with the love of my life. That was my best
that makes
friend.
Sense.
Yeah. Like, he watched my dad and my family go through a divorce and all this stuff. So I go back and I'm like, I'm going to read all this. It's going to read like The Notebook, our romance back and forth where we're commenting on each other. No, it's
not
like,
even
I effing miss you, D-E-W-D, dude. And like, best friends for life till death do us part. I'm like, no wonder. He was like,
embarrassing.
I'm on the phone with you right now. And we're totally rad.
I had a high school boyfriend who like, it was like, I think I was like a freshman in high school. So it was like not a real boyfriend. It was just like a guy that you like sat at lunch with. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think we dated for like 1 week. So like, I'm not trying to brag, but we were really committed. And in my journal, I wrote about it. And my mom had said that she didn't like him because he smoked the devil's lettuce. And she was like, you need to break up with that guy. And I like wrote in my live journal, I was like, my mom doesn't understand me.
No.
I was like, she doesn't get that I see people beyond their drug abuse, is what I said. Like, literally so embarrassing. Deep.
Wow.
Oh, so embarrassing. And like reading that back, I was just like, who is this little idiot child? And
you let her have access
to the internet. I literally was like, and I remember this, like looking back when I read it, the boyfriend, we're gonna use air quotes on that, in question, I think he smoked weed like twice ever at that point. And he was older. He was like, I was like a freshman. He was like a junior. So he had smoked twice in his little life at that point. And I was like, he's a drug abuser.
No, that was a big deal then. Like, I remember the guy I liked. I found out he did. And I was like, I didn't know you did this.
I can't believe you would do this.
Wow.
Next you're going to tell me that you've had a beer before.
I'm curious how that boyfriend's life turned out. Did he do it again or did he quit?
I have no idea.
All my boyfriends are dead.
The reason we broke up, so again, we were very committed. It was a week. I had not even held hands with this boy, okay? Mm. So very committed relationship. We were in love, obviously going to get married and have children. Unfortunate for him, of course, that I did that with someone else. And he did not tell me that his family was moving to Washington. And he just moved.
He watched his car.
He just moved.
Well,
literally just moved on me. Did not say anything. Did not come to school on Monday. Like, we started dating on a Monday. Friday happens. We start again, air quotes on the dating. We decided we were in a relationship on a Monday. Friday comes. The weekend comes. This is before any of us had cell phones. Like, I think I had one, but I was only allowed to use it for like volleyball matches and stuff. The next Monday comes around and I'm like, where is he? Where is my beloved boyfriend, of whom I am very in love with and we have a committed relationship? And I asked his friend and I was like, hey, where is Adam? Like, why is Adam not at school today? And he was like, Adam moved to Washington this weekend. And I was just like, oh, that's good. Anyway, that, I feel like that was a really good prelude for what I should have expected at Buffalo Exchange.
It's all connected. Stuff really ended like that. I remember my first boyfriend, like, it was time for the dance. We talked before the dance. And then when he showed up to the dance, he was there with another girl from another school. And I was like, we talked today. Like, how did this move?
But drama.
All of my high school boyfriends died.
Okay, that is feeling very foreshadowing for your future job.
No, you know, and like the, it was weird when it happened the first time, because it was like, oh, my first FBO person, you know, he unfortunately died at 16. And then my other boyfriend, the one that left me at the dance, he died in a motorcycle accident when we were 20. And, you know, my third, like, very serious boyfriend is dying of cancer.
And
he has just a few months to live. And then my fourth boyfriend, this is everyone. This is the whole timeline. I didn't have a lot of boyfriends, but they all end up like this. So my fourth boyfriend, he has died and been brought back. And then he did, unfortunately, he's in jail now because he murdered someone.
Out of curiosity, how's your current partner feeling? Is he feeling good? Is he feeling healthy?
Is he making
good choices?
Well, I tell people this. I'm like, every single boyfriend I've ever had has died or is dying. That is the reality of the situation. I don't know why. I don't think I'm like unintentionally like putting out that, but it is
sometimes
traumatic.
That's just the way the cookie crumbles.
It has reached the point where I do tell people, you know, this is unfortunate, but every person I ever have, shortly after we break up, they die. That's just it.
So again, how's your current partner feeling? Is he feeling strong and healthy and good and also making wise choices?
And my boyfriend before this one is fine. The rest aren't. The rest are a mess. But these two are fine so far. But I have nightmares about like people dying in fires and like their skin falling off and all of these things because it's traumatic. It's like,
I would imagine so.
I mean, I'm barely 30. Like I just got into my 30s and it's like, how are all these people dying?
If it makes you feel any better in a sense, all of my friends growing up, except for two or three of them have passed as well. Wow. So isn't that wild how that works out? And then we find ourselves in these positions where we are surrounded by death for like conversation and work.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like it's sad, obviously, but I also feel like it almost sets you up for this kind of work.
It's not, it's not normal. And I bring this up a lot, not just my boyfriends, but a lot of my friends. And I was thinking, so we used to go to this punk house in Indiana, PA. It was called the Punk House. And someone passed away this past autumn. And I said, you know, if you told me when I was standing in a room 10 years ago with these people that over 10 of the people in that room would be dead within 10 years, I would have never believed it. And it's not normal. We grow up and we're told, yeah, some people will die young. Some people every couple of years will die young. But I'm not told that twice a year people, you know, will die. And it's fentanyl. It's all of these other things that are going on. And it truly is hard to grasp. So when people see me and they're like, why are you so obsessed with death? That was a comment I got recently.
It's,
and I was like,
literally inescapable.
Yeah, it's not. And the only way I can like survive is, you know, surrounding myself, being comforted with it and walking with it and knowing that one day it'll be my time. I can't fear it. I would lose my mind knowing how many people I've loved. Like, I'm not talking people I knew who knew someone who knew someone. And same for you.
Like these are like real life one-on-one people. Yeah.
And the first one hurts, but then it becomes the second and third and fourth. And it still hurts, but it's like, how is this another? How is this another beautiful, brilliant, amazing soul gone in this direction? And we're not told that. We're just told people might die, but there's no conversation, especially when you're growing up, conditioning to navigate that, what it's like when no one's there anymore. I took my boyfriend, and it's not just like you and I, it's not everyone. Cause I took my boyfriend to a cemetery by my parents' house. And I was like, oh yeah, that kid, car accident, this kid overdose, this kid, you know, suicide, this one was murdered, one of them. And it's like this small town. I went to school with 80 people. How are that many dead? And I was like, do you know anyone who died? And he's like, I think there's one girl I went to high school with that died. One. And I'm like, this is not, I can't imagine that reality.
Like I said, I really feel like it, without sounding like biblical about it, because it's not how I don't mean it in a godly way. But like, I do feel like certain people are conditioned to kind of need to have this death positive outlook in life. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise, like, there'd be nobody who's protecting the dead. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I know that maybe sounds a little dramatic, but I do feel like there's this, like, I don't know, this collection of people that unfortunately find themselves in a situation where their life is surrounded with tragedy. And in that, you kind of go one of two directions. And one of the direction, well, there's lots of directions, but one of the directions you go is becoming very protective of death and comforted by like all things surrounding it and being almost a death advocate. And mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't know if you're a part of it, but there's a couple of different organizations that are death positive. Like I'm a member of the Order of the Good Death. Mm-hmm. And there's a handful of them, of course, but I feel like almost everybody who finds themselves in those positions are in positions like ours where you kind of have these tragedies happen and you grow from it.
Yeah. Before Fran died, this is now coming on 6 years, I was like, la-da-da, old people die. And then your invincible, amazing, beautiful, well-liked friend who has a signed ban is hilarious, tons of friends, dies. And you're like, well, what does that mean? What does that mean for me? What is the people who give life to people like me, the people who, you know, like I'm just kind of on the fringes. And then I meet these incredible people. Those people aren't supposed to die. I am. I'm the one that's like the NPC, right. I feel like. And so that changed my perspective. And I started learning about it more. And now it's completely different. So people, I used to put trigger warnings on my videos and now I don't, because I don't think it should be a stain that we run from. I think it's something we have to look at like a birthday party or graduation. Everyone dies. And it doesn't just mean they live a long life and they die. We need to start viewing any death as an acceptable one that we can consume, even if it feels untimely. We need to remove that narrative. And I think the way people are further traumatizing themselves and each other. It, you know, I had someone come up to me after my lecture, bless them. I think about this often, but when they were listening to me speak, they said, for over a year, I've said my dad passed away. But when I heard you talk, I now know that I can say my dad died. And I really appreciate that perspective. And I said, yeah, you know, we need to be comfortable with that word. And it's become a dirty word. People say, oh, they passed. It's a secret. You know, we don't want to mess them up. And it's like, what does the euphemism do? Why are we sugarcoating it? They died and it's okay that they died.
Yeah, I am. So I'm working on my third book, and my third book is about death and death magic and all that. And I have a whole section where I'm talking about like being okay with like dying as not just like for ourselves, but like the fact that we as a Western culture have moved. We're so removed from death in general that we say things like passed away, or we also like, we don't handle our bodies anymore on a personal level. We waxify them and everything else. We do all these things, right, that make it so that way, even when the dead body's right there in front of us, we're still not confronting death. And I think that there's almost like a beauty in taking back that power of the fact that like, this is a natural part of life. And being honest with ourselves about it, obviously in a pace that fits each person individually. Yeah. If we're honest with ourselves about it, it helps with the grieving process altogether, because
yes,
it's a reality. It's now a real thing that we're confronted with, and we can process at our own time, whatever that looks like, to be able to heal and move forward. And I think that we just are so removed. Like, I could talk about this topic for hours and hours and hours, I won't. But
yeah, I think
have a very large passion for it.
If you don't consume it as it is, and you're only consuming the light version, the euphemism, you can consume they passed away, but you really have to sit with it to work through it. And that's why people get stuck in grief, because they're like, I don't want to think about it. It's dirty. We have to get back to work in 3 days, 2 days. 2 days people have to take off work for a spouse, their best friend, their parent, like
a child,
their closest loved one. Yeah. Just go back to work. And when you go back to work, you better not cry. You better be a functional cog in the machine, or else, you know, it's going to affect you. And then you get called to the office and they say, you know, we need to talk about your performance. That's what death is in Western culture.
Unfortunately, that's the reality of it. We live in this Western capitalized society that is so removed from and detached from any human emotion. God forbid you have one.
Oh, don't cry in front of, you know, the mourners. Whenever you work as a funeral director, that's the number one thing, is like, that's your lack of professionalism. And I'm like, I just watched a 90-year-old woman tell her husband, see you soon, as she watches him get wheeled away on a cot because he's passed. And I'm going to cry because it's midnight and I rolled out of bed to watch this happen. And it's sad.
You know what though? Even if it wasn't midnight, even if you didn't roll out of bed, that's a real huge, that's a real thing. Yeah. That's real. That's reality. That is real. That is like even death removed from the situation. That's love.
Yeah.
And that is pure and true and honest. And like, I know when my grandfather passed away last August, and my grandmother passed away last month, 2 months ago. And the whole time between the day my grandfather died and the day she died, all she talked about was how much she missed grandpa. She can't wait to see him again, all this stuff. And it's like, that's real life. That's a real thing.
Exactly.
Like, I don't know.
But they put these professionals
desensitized to all these things.
They want us as professionals to not have empathy. We just have to do our job. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I watched an entire family, mom, daughter, uncle, all get wiped out during COVID. And what? I'm not supposed to feel anything? I'm not supposed to... Sorry, but goodbye. Like, I just, I was so scared. My second week in the industry, someone said something very crass about a decedent. And I went to my preceptor and I said, I don't think this is for me. I can't allow myself. I don't want to be so removed. So when people see me, you know, with a coffin in my house and, I, you know, all of these memorials for children that have passed over 100 years ago, they're like, oh, you're obsessed with death and dead babies and you think it's cool. And instead it's like, no, I feel something. I feel like I should protect this because we have it's a marvel because we don't even think about the dead anymore. We have to keep going because it is a capitalist society where it's like people have to keep moving. We can't stop to grieve. We can't make a wreath out of human hair. We can't, you know, put up a poster on the wall of the decedent. It has to be, we don't talk about the dead. I remember being told that as a child. Oh, you don't talk about people who died because it could upset someone.
So let them be upset. It's a real emotion.
Exactly.
I don't know, it's like I've done work in the past of taking care of forgotten grave sites and maintaining them. And it's always just so sad because you're like, this is someone. Not only is this someone, but this is somebody who meant something to somebody else. Like, especially like you look at the old, like going back to like the Victorian period, and we have like the graves that have the fences around them, the graves that look like beds, the graves that have, you know, the images on them, mm-hmm. like the porcelain prints yes. of them, either alive or dead or both or whatever. And you're just like, this is somebody who really mattered. They yeah. mattered. And like, they aren't just some NPC for us to forget. These are human beings who had whole intricate and complex lives. And now just some random woman is scraping the moss off of, you know, the side of their grave or whatever, pulling up weeds. And I think that there's real beauty that needs to be appreciated in remembering the dead, even if yeah. we didn't know them.
Yep, exactly. And I think that what I advocate for is you can remember people without funneling money into a funeral home. You can set a place at the table for someone who's not there. You can stitch someone's name into the sleeve of your shirt. You can light a candle yeah. and think about them and meditate about it. And there are ways that are not, you know, expensive to memorialize someone. And I think that once we remove that monetary idea and see the value beyond money and see the value in, again, meditation, thought of that person, we'll get closer and more comfortable with it.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that, I don't know, I think that normalizing talking about death and dying just in general is like the first step you can make in your life to not being so afraid of the inevitable.
Yep.
Because yeah. that's just what it is. It is inevitable. Tomorrow's never promised to any of us. It really isn't. And I think Mm-mm. that once you become much more comfortable with the conversations around death and dying, et cetera, et cetera, on like a personal level, you also take every day like way more positively.
Exactly. People look at me and they've been commenting. I've been in the ringer this week as far as comments go. And people are like, your house is so depressing. How can you be surrounded by death like that? Are you good? Do you have a therapist? Hi, yes, I have a therapist. That my therapist is familiar with my interests. I'm fine. My medical professionals are not concerned about this. It's not like I'm obsessed. It's not like I wake up every day, I wish I were dead. And I don't see yeah. these people that have passed as, you know, oh, I wish I were like them. I wish I weren't here or anything. I see them as like representatives of their era. And to me, yeah. I think it's beautiful that people mattered so much because guess what we do to people today? We don't put them on charcoal portraits on the wall. We don't, you know, build something in their memory. We scroll past them. We delete camera rolls of whole albums after we're done with someone, right? You're not in my life anymore. Delete. It's not, mm-hmm. there's nothing physical lingering. There's not going to be as much of us left behind. And even in, you know, people say the internet's forever. There are mass amounts of files from the internet getting deleted as we speak. It's a huge topic.
We're in a digital dark age. And I think that people take for granted the fact that we have things like the cloud, mm-hmm. that they just trust that that's going to exist forever. And that's not sustainable. It's not fact. And if I can leave anybody with any like parting advice for anything is to get your photos printed.
Yes. Yep.
Get your 100%. Photos printed, back up your videos on thumb drives. Like these things are not going to exist forever. And especially when we like I'm a mom, mm-hmm. I have my kids saved on a cloud. And you know what? My husband and I have been talking about this. We're backing all that stuff up on yes. thumb drives. We get stuff printed. We have like, cause it's just not going to exist. Like, we joke about how our generation only has a couple of photos of us as babies. But guess what? If we don't start protecting this stuff now, like, by printing it, making physical copies, making things tangible, they're going to have nothing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I think people don't even know what their photos look like. There are whole generations of people who have never held a printed photo like that. And when I go get mine printed, even the ones I'm insecure that I don't think are great photos, like as far as my photography goes of other people, right, or whatever, the quality isn't there. As soon as it's printed, it's like you wouldn't even notice that. The internet has become obsessed with perfection. No, get them printed. My boyfriend was traveling and I printed some photos he had sent me of him like sitting in a chair in an old prison. And I was like, I printed these for you. And he's like, oh, thank you. It's like a whole different thing. So yes, that is a good parting advice is write something down, print it out, make tangible things, because one, that's not bad for the environment. The photos will break down. They won't like last beyond you. And people don't realize when their phone goes, sometimes that means all those memories too.
Yeah. Yeah. And the cloud will not exist forever. It just won't. Nope. I think that it's nice to think of that, but it's not going to, or at least it's not going to exist in a capacity that it exists now. So like, let's keep things rooted and grounded in reality and, I don't know, protect our memories.
Yeah, exactly.
Protect them. On that note, I should probably free you. So I want to tell our listeners, thank you so much for joining us this week for Coffee Talk. We hope that we'll see you next week for our regular episode. Again, you can check out our website for links to our submission forms, shoot us an email, or get our phone number off there to leave us a voicemail. Send us any stories, witchy tips, or topics that you think that the community would love to hear. And as always, if you're enjoying Coffee and Cauldrons, please take a moment to review us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anywhere else that you're tuning in from. Or you can consider supporting us directly by joining our Patreon, where we share articles, we have spells of the month, we have a Discord that has got like 9 activities a month for you to join, including 2 book clubs, a monthly ritual, meditation, etc. So on that note, thank you, Becky, very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. It's been really fun.
Yeah. And thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll see you next time.